What we're going to deal with today is the reconciliation. I don't know if that's the right word or not, but maybe the attempted reconciliation, but that's part of what we need to speak about. But I'll start the sentence again. What we're going to talk about today is the reconciliation between Yosef and his brothers. In previous years, we spoke about Yehuda's impassioned speech, so we're past that, so now we're at the next stage. Again, without wanting to go too far back, but you need a little bit, because when we start source one, it says, V'lo yechol Yosef l'tapek. Yosef, you know, can't hold back any further. So right there, it gets the commentaries going. So does that mean he wanted to hold back further? Does that mean that there's something else that Yosef still wanted to accomplish? The larger question, and again, this is something we all need to know already, the larger question is, does Yosef have a plan? Does he not have a plan? And the way that we look at it is, that's me and ever who is forced to listen to me. The way that we look at it is that, yes, Yosef has had a plan all the way through. And he's been very, very specific on the things that he's done. He has set them up from the very beginning. And now, he can't go any further. So I think part of the question is, so what then is the plan, or what has he been trying to do? But more importantly to me today is, so what happens during this speech? So just to try again, not to go too far back in the past and try to focus on the present and the future, let's try to put it like this. The thing which has bothered Yosef all the way through has been really one problem, or maybe two problems. One side of it is that they never do come looking for him. They never do come and try to fix what they've done. There have been expressions along the way of guilt. There have been expressions along the way, we didn't hear our brothers cry, and so on. But they did not go far enough, because they're not actually looking, which means part of what Yosef tries to bring them towards is this realization that you don't leave a brother behind. That's it. You don't leave a brother behind. And that's what they did. They left a brother behind. The flip side of it was, what happens to your father when you leave a brother behind? Which means I'm saying that there are two parts of the relationship. One part is how you treated your brother, and the other part of it is, and once you treat your brother that way, then how is your father, in this case, your parents, how is your father going to take it? So that's really where we're up to. And where Yosef can't control himself any longer is when Yehuda gives this great speech, and the great speech was turning to Yosef, which again, those of you who don't know the story, so this is a spoiler alert, I mean, this guy really is Yosef. But the beauty of Yehuda's speech is that he's pointing to Yosef and saying, look what you're doing to my father. You're causing my father all this pain. You're doing this and you're doing this. And finally, Yosef is looking at him and saying, I'm doing this? I'm the one who's doing this to the father? Which means, this is not me. This has been, I'm the victim here. And that really is Yosef's big response, especially according to the Sforno, and especially according to the Netziv, who I think hashes out the Sforno a little bit more. So let's read a little bit, and then I do want to get to a number of the commentaries and see what they do with Yosef's speech. Because again, you have the dramatic moment, and then you have what happens afterwards. And then you have this other lingering question we're not going to deal with. Was Yosef successful or not successful in terms of the relationship with his brothers? Because I think some of us will realize by the time we get to the end of the book, the brothers never do trust him again. And you have to ask, could Yosef have done this differently? Or there's an interesting conversation that goes over here. As I said, I want to point out some things in Yosef's speech, but we need a little bit of background. But let's begin. V'lo yechol Yosef lehitapek l'kol hanitzavim alav, v'yekru hotziu kol ish me'alai, v'lo omad ish ito behitvada Yosef elachav. Now, what I want to notice all the way through today is relationships. Again, I told you, one relationship is you don't leave a brother behind. So what's the relationship of the brothers and Yosef? The other relationship is the father. So over here, as Yosef confesses, and I think the word hitvada is very interesting to use in this case, as Yosef makes this confession, because vidui is something that we normally connect to somebody who has sinned and now wants to confess the sin, as Yosef confesses to his brothers, because other words could have been used. But notice, el echav, to his brothers. Other words could have been used here as well, even though I do believe this is the easiest word to use. V'yiten et kol l'bivchi, Yosef cries, v'yishmu mitzrayim v'yishma beit paro. And everyone hears about this scene. V'yomer Yosef,
very strange if nobody's there.
But no, they hear about the scene, about the scene. Vayomer Yosef el Echav. So again, it's el Echav. And this is an interesting verse. Vayomer Yosef el Echav, ani Yosef. Ha'od avi chai. Now, he did not have to say avi. He could have said avinu. So Yosef's going to be doing this constantly in this speech. And as I said, I want you to pay attention to the relationships. Ha'od avichai, is my father alive? Now that itself is a preposterous question. Yes? The reason it's a preposterous question, because if Yaakov's not alive, then why would the brothers have been, Yehuda specifically, why would he have behaved the way that he does? I swore to my father I'll bring him back, instead of just having him in prison, have us all in prison, or now, instead of him being in prison, I'll take his place in prison. So again, it could be a little Dostoevsky-like, and Yehuda's searching for his punishment, and he deserves to be punished, and he knows to be punished, which really means then that the issue has nothing to do with Binyamin and this stolen cup, and it's really all about Mechirat Yosef. But if Yaakov's not alive, then Yehuda's entire speech makes no sense. He says, how can you do this? Again, that's what he says. How can you do this to my father? You're going to kill him. Yaakov is going to die if the son that he loves is taken from him. How can you do this? And then comes this unbelievably, and again, I apologize for this, but I think this is what Chazal say, this unbelievably cynical statement from Yosef, which they never respond to. And we've discussed this before, and that statement is, Ani Yosef, Oda Vichai. And the Oda Vichai is cynical because you just said, if you take the son away from him, who he loves, your father's going to die. I'm Yosef. Is my father still alive? And that's silence. Again, understand what he said. You just said that you can't take away the son that my father loves, that our father loves, that your father loves, because if you take away the son that he loves, he's going to die. Ani Yosef, Oda Vichai. And by the way, they never respond to this. You can go through the rest of the chapter. They never respond to this question. Ha'od avichai. Rather, what does it say? V'lo yuchlu achev la'anot oto. There's no answer to this. Kinav halumi panav. Again, complete silence. Take a look at the Sfarno on the bottom of page 3, source 19. Yes, these are deliberately not in order to keep you awake. This is a pedagogical tool. Ha'od avichai, eifshar shelo met mida'agato alai. How could he not have died worried about me based upon your own, again, Sforno is very terse, but I think that's exactly what, how could he still be alive that he never, how could he never have died worrying about me? Again, based on Yehuda's speech. Yeah, but this is bad. No offense. This is better. Take a look at the Mitziv in source 20. Take a look at the Mitziv in source 20. Ani Yosef, v'lo amar Hashem achartem oti, v'asher evin ki shomim mibachutz, people are listening. The walls have ears. You wonder how people know they're listening. Al kein amar b'kitzur, Ani Yosef, v'yu ha-shomim sforim she'nignav mi-beit avi, emayde mishmeim levad. And people listening would have thought, because again, you can't keep secrets in the palace. So the people, Ani Yosef, they would have thought that he was kidnapped, but they would not have realized that the treachery was actually done by his own flesh and blood. Ha'od avichai, eino muvan she'lazu, v'chi lo yada shu chai? The question makes no sense. He doesn't know he's alive. V'gam mashit she'mesayim emikor, v'lo yuchul avchav la'anot oto, kino v'lu mipanav. And moreover, it says they couldn't answer, because they were shocked. Nivhalu is better than shock. Tzarech biur ma hayulehem anot lulei lo nivhalu. Okay, let's say they weren't nivhal, they weren't speechless, then what would they have said if they could have spoken? V'ne'it v'chagiga daftalad revelazer kimatu lahaykra. So he's using the Gemara, again, exactly the way I would have used the Gemara to explain this far enough, because I think it's exactly what he's doing. Bechi, he would cry when he got to this verse. V'lo yichlu achiv lanot oto. That he would use this verse and say, oh, right, what's going to happen? What's going to happen when we stand in front of God? But he goes, where's their tochach over here? Where's the rebuke over here? That they understood that this was being said. I'm going to translate this, I don't know, in a it's being said, and I don't want to use the word cynical now, but it's being said in a way, I'm Yosef. Again, what's the tone of voice that he uses? Does he use a soft, loving tone of voice? Hi, I'm Yosef. Is Dad still alive? It's a very, very cynical comment, and that's the way he's saying the Gemara understands it. Im bemet od Avichai v'lo meit midaagato alai, again, the same thing as the Sforno, right? How can my father still be alive, not worry about me? V'yot yodea shehu ahuv etzlo mikol banav, v'hinu shedayek lomar od Avichai v'lo omar avinu. So again, he notices the relationship over here. It's od Avichai. Is my father still alive? My father who loved me more than anyone else? By the way, it's just very interesting now. Again, if this is correct, and I am very, very sympathetic to this read, but if this is correct, so then Yosef is coming in, because I'm going back again. What we're talking about today is the reconciliation. So if the starting part of the reconciliation is my father, again, he says to his brothers, is my father still alive? My father who loved me more than he loved you. What second? There is this complication. Yes, there is this complication going on. And again, it's not simple. It's worthwhile reading the rest of this. Again, I'll just read one more line. V'tmiyazu haya tochecha l'achiv. And the brothers took this as a tochecha. After this nitziv, there's a long Beit HaLevi over here, which I don't know if we'll get to, but the end of the Beit HaLevi, which you don't have, you'll have to look it up. The end of the Beit, because it goes on for another three pages. I have it. But the end of the Beit HaLevi is worth our reading. We'll see if we have a chance to get through it. But let's go back to the beginning. Esther. Yeah, there's a great midrash that says the brothers all died. There's a midrash that says they all died. Again, it doesn't mean literally, but they were as good as dead. It's shock. It's shock. That's really the word. The brothers are in such complete shock. They can't speak. They can't do anything. Yeah. But by the way, there's another midrash. There's so many beautiful midrash. There's another midrash where Yosef says to him, again, there's a missing sentence. He says, hold it. You just claim that Yosef is dead. You're lying. He's not dead. And they say, what are you talking about? And he said, no, Yosef is alive. And they say, what do you... He goes, not only is he alive, he's in the palace. And they say, where? And he goes, he's in the room. And they're like, where? and they still can't possibly get it. No, he's right here. He's in the room. And then they're looking all over, and they just can't get that this is Yosef, which I don't know why. I mean, I know it's Yosef every year. I know it's Yosef. And I don't know. I can't begin to understand why they... Why? No, but the, okay. So let's read a little more. I know that. I didn't say that. Don't blame me.
Okay,
The Nitziv said it. He made believe the next verse wasn't there. But therefore, the Rishonim, I'm going to have to do something with the next verse. And that's exactly what I want to get to. But why are you reading ahead? That's cheating. Okay.
It was
bold. Okay, good. Let's go back to the first source then. They can't speak. Pasuk Dalid. Vayomi Yosef el Echav. Again, the first thing is this unbelievable bombshell. I'm Yosef. Is my father still alive? Which is, it's not just the shock that it's Yosef. It's Yosef, my father who loves me, and you are hypocrites and you're liars. And you are accusing me, the victim, of torturing my father. And what about what you did 22 years ago? I mean, think a second. Esav is a bad guy, right? We don't like Esav. Esav at least said, when my father is dead, then I'm going to kill Yaakov. You couldn't wait for him to be dead? You're the one who caused my father for 22 years to be mourning. And now you're going to turn around to me and say, look what you're doing to our father? I'm Yosef. Is my father still alive? So there is this shock that it's Yosef, and there is this shock that he just took away their great... we live with certain truths, which sometimes are lies, but we live with certain explanations of how our world works. By the way, that's what the Beit HaLevi says. I mean, that's the end of the Beit HaLevi. He brings the... I don't know why I'm telling you this. But he brings this wonderful Pirkei de... No. Tana de Eliyahu, where Eliyahu Anavi meets this fisherman, and he says to this fisherman, fisherman, you seem to be having this jolly, happy-go-lucky life. Why don't you ever sit and learn Torah? What are you going to do in Yom HaDin? What are you going to do when you stand in front of God? So he says, I got a plan. So he goes, what's the plan? I'm going to tell God that he didn't give me intelligence to be able to learn Torah, so that I got an excuse. So he goes, what do you do for a living? I'm a fisherman, you know. So as a fisherman, you know, what time of day do you go out and fish? You go out early. What do you do? He goes, you know, I make nets. How do you make the nets? I use this and this knot and this and so on. So then Eliyahu says, he says to him, he goes, Ma'asecha sotrim et dvarecha. Your actions contradict your words. And he goes, and the guy was absolutely, he goes, that's what God's going to say to you. He said, oh, he gave me intelligence for this, but no, no, your actions contradict your words. You have capability, and you chose not to use it. And the guy was very distraught. He started to cry and to cry. And Leo says, I'll tell you a secret about what happens in Beit and Shamala. He goes, every person who's ever died has tried the same excuse. You didn't give me the capability. And every person who dies, God shows them in their own life that they had the capability, and they just use it in other ways. So he says, that's oilani liyom adin alim yom atochacha. That's what's the Yosef. Which means your whole excuse that you had in your life, again, what's Yehuda's excuse? Look what you're doing to our father. Look at this terrible. Look what I'm doing to our father. And what about 22 years ago when you had this great idea, let's sell him. What about what you've done to your father? Suddenly your whole excuse, your whole impassioned speech. Yeah, of course they couldn't speak. What are they going to say now? That's it. It's over. But then Yosef comes back and he says to his brothers, Gishunai lai, come. V'yagashu. By the way, that's very brave. They come close. But it's brave of them. He says, come close. So see, that's what you, maybe I should have bolded that. I did bold that. Gishuna, come close. So they come. So what's the implication of coming close? If he's coming, they come close, he doesn't have to speak as loud. V'yigashu v'yomer, and now you'll understand he can say in a very soft voice, Ani Yosef, I'm Yosef, Achichem, your brother, Asher machartem oti Mitzrayimah, who you've sold to Egypt. Now, I can say right over here, again, there is this back and forth. I'm Yosef, your brother, who you sold. Which means, so which is it? Again, I'm going back to this point of reconciliation. I'm going to say it again. Yosef's major issue over here divides to two. You don't leave a brother behind. I'm your brother who you sold. And what the implication is in terms of the father. These are the issues. Now, if we'll take a look, knowing it's Yosef sort of gives the whole thing away. Look at source 14 for a moment on page 3. Again, the Sforno. And yes, we like the Sforno. Hashem machartem, who you sold, uvizeh teid'u she'ani Yosef b'li safek. This is how you're going to know that I'm really Yosef. She'lo yada ish b'mechirati. Because no one else knew about the sale. V'she'ani achichem, and that I'm your brother, zulateinu, except for us. Because the ones who bought had no idea that you were selling your brother. The only ones who knew are you and me. And therefore, again, the way that he has it is, come here, I'm Yosef, who you sold. And this is meaning he's trying to prove by this, meaning because we understand it at first hear it. Hi, come close, I'm Yosef, who you sold. He's twisting again, go to the tone of voice. The same Sforno has Oda Vichai is the most cynical statement in the world, and then he has who you sold as actually proof that I'm really Yosef, and it's much more of a conciliatory tone being used. Go now to the Alshech in source number 2. Yosef Achichem, Klomar, I'm Yosef, right? Yosef, your brother. Klomar Nimna Imachem, I am one of you, and I'm going to say this again. Source 2, Yosef Achichem Klomar Nimna Imachem, V'nikra Achichem. Im Shemachartem Otim Mitzrayma, Asher Kan Makom Zima Mukhan L'Chalel Abrit, V'alpi Darko Ramazlam Gam Shadacha Dechiyotono Meha'achva Be'et HaMachira. By saying, I am Yosef, your brother, Yosef is saying, I'm still your brother. And even though you try to get rid of me, I reject this, and I am still your brother, and there is brotherhood over here, and I'm going to say it again. You don't reject a brother. This is Yosef's message. Now, I want to point something out. which perhaps is not as as obvious. But quickly, source number three, the Bechor Shor. Bechor Shor 3, the Riva 4, L'Chizkuni 5, and the Rush 6, and the Hadar Zakenim 7, are all from the school of the Baalei HaTosfot, which means this is all the larger Tosfot school, and they all say the exact same thing. But they say the same thing in different words. But they're all working off of the same perspective, and it's the issue which I've raised. Look at the Bechor Shor. Geshunai lai, come close. Kidei lomar shemachartim oti b'chashai, because he wanted to say who you sold softly. Pen yishma adami mechutz v'yirgishu v'yitbayshu. He did, and again, there's two ways of reading this, that Yosef would be humiliated if people found out that he was sold by his own brothers. But that's not what the Bechor Shor says. But he did this, come close, who you sold, so the brothers shouldn't be embarrassed, for their treachery. Va'od shelo ya'avor al shvu'ato shenishba shelo yigaleh. And also that he shouldn't break the vow. I don't know, what in the world vow are we talking about? That he shouldn't break the vow to reveal it. The Riva similarly writes, Pirish, he calls them close as not to embarrass them. Rashi says, that he had sworn during the sale that he would not reveal it. Hold it. There's something very strange about it. When exactly was there a vow, and when did Yosef swear, and what is his story about? When they sold him, he swore he would never come back to his father's home. And he'll never tell his father that he's alive. That he was sold. He'll never tell another person that he's the son of Yaakov. And Yosef accepted this upon himself. The imlo kain. And now you'll see that, again, trying to answer the same question they're about, because if this isn't the case, Adonav, why did he never tell his father that he's around? So, again, we know the Ramban's approach, the dreams must come true. The Baalei HaTosfot approach is, because Yosef made a vow. He made a vow he would never tell. But why did he make a vow? Because the brothers didn't want him to. So hold it a second. Do you realize what's really going on over here? At the same time that the brothers are rejecting him as a brother and selling him, there is a pact between the brothers that they will never tell anybody. And Yosef says, oh, there's a pact between the brothers. Okay, I'm bound by the same pact. Why am I bound by the same pact? Because I'm one of the brothers. So Yaakov never knew. Yaakov never knows, presumably. Again, there's a machloka between the Chumash and Chazal on this. Right? Well, this is the way that the brothers tell over the story. But that's not the important thing, if Yaakov knows or not. The important thing over here is what exactly they're saying here. Is that the very moment the brothers are trying to reject Yosef as a brother, Yosef is showing complete... He refuses to be rejected as one of the brothers. Chizkuni, source 5. Yishunai lai lomer lahem inyana mechira belichisha shelo yishmu achirim. Others shouldn't hear. The Rush in source 6. V'yesh lomai. Right, Tema. It's shocking. Echim tin kol kach Yosef lo dia loviv. How did he wait so long to let his father know he's around? Shusha worry but sar gadol ki hu chai. His father's suffering, right? Blame the victim. Yosef, why are you causing your father so much pain? V'yeshloma b'shat hacherim. Again, all of the Baalei HaTosfot are working with this assumption. Yeah, there was a cherim. They all said that no one can reveal it. Shatfu at Yosef yimayim shelo lagalot et davar. V'im kein haya mukhrach kem shelo micha behem. He has to gather them all together, the same group, and say, let's cancel the vow. You should read the rest of the Rosh also, because then he tries to bring contemporary applications to this in terms of shul politics. But that's if you want to see the source of this, it's source 13. The Pirkei Lezer writes, "Machru oto liyishmaelim be'esrim kasef." He was sold for 20 pieces of silver. The kol echad v'chal natal shnei kasefim l'knot mina'alayim b'raglehim, and all of them used it to buy shoes, which is based upon shenemar, based on the pasuk in Amos, "Am michrom mikesef tzadik v'avion bavur na'alayim." It's also found in the Apocrypha in the Testament of the 12 tribes. They sold him for shoes. See, you're not the first one. Amru Nachrim. Okay. Amru Nachrim Beinenu. They said, let's make a formal vow that the person will be excommunicated and no longer, again, be your brother. I'm exaggerating literally. She'in Echad Mimenu. Magid hadavar liYaakov avinu. None of us will reveal this to our father Yaakov. Ad sheyiyeh b'reshut kulanu, unless all of us agree. Amar lam Yehuda, Reuven eino kan. Reuven's not here. We're going to come back to Reuven in a moment. Ve'ein acherim mitkayem el ba'asara. We need 10 people. You mean a minion to make the cherim? Ma asu shitfu lemako mimar bechrimu. They brought God in this as well. V'yared Reuven b'laylul alot. Where was Reuven? So listen to a new approach. Where was Reuven? V'yared Reuven b'laylul alot et Yosef min abor v'lo matza otosham. That Reuven went looking, he went someplace looking for Yosef. He didn't find him. Amar lam haraktim et Yosef ani ani avav. V'higidu lo et davar asher she'asu v'et acherim she'achrimu v'sham Reuven et acherim v'shatak v'gam HaKadosh Baruch Hu shatak. Reuven was silent, and God was silent. Because of the cherim, God didn't tell Yaakov. So this is the whole source for anyone who ever goes and says, no, they put him on trial. That's not in the Midrash. That's the Shlach HaKadosh says it. But this is the basis, that God was willing to accept what the brothers say. The brothers make a cherim, so if the brothers make a cherim, Reuven accepts it, God accepts it. By the way, the Midrash doesn't say Yosef accepts it. The Baalei HaTosfot would say, well, if everyone accepts it, Yosef says, okay, me too, I'm also accepting it, which means the Midrash doesn't go, well, hold it, they only had 9, they needed 10. They could have said, okay, Yosef, we need another for a minion. Can you join us over here? We're making a cherim. What's the cherim? We're never going to tell. No. See, that part is not here. Unless there's another Midrash I didn't find. But that Midrash is not here. What the Midrash says, they only had 9 because Reuven wasn't there. So who do they use? They use God. And therefore, God never tells Yaakov. And that's interesting. Reuven shows up, Reuven accepts it. Yosef hears it. So Yosef, meaning they're trying to get rid of him, and Yosef is saying, no, I'm one of you. So therefore, if you're not going to tell, I'm not going to tell. So I'm just saying is that this question of the Ramban, why Yosef never contacted the brothers, the Baalei HaTosfot would have a whole different approach to it. He doesn't say because there's a vow. He accepts upon him the vow as all the other brothers. Now, I want to go back to Reuven for a second, because this concept that you don't reject a brother, it actually goes back a little bit earlier, and it will explain something. I want to ask you a question, because I think there's multiple answers to this. Question is, and then we have to get back to the speech. Why does Reuven try to save Yosef? So A, you can say, because Reuven is more decent than the rest of them, and you're going to have a hard time convincing me. Second, you're going to say that perhaps Reuven, as the oldest, thinks he'll get the most, has the most responsibility to get in the most trouble, and I like that. Third approach you can say is Reuven already messed up once, and now he wants to maybe fix things, and later on he tries to fix things again. Oh, Yaakov, let me go and try to, give me Binyamin, and if I don't succeed, he can kill my 2 kids. And Yaakov, so, pachas kimayim, right? You are unstable as water. I mean, he doesn't go for it. There's another possibility, and let me just say the opposite way. Reuven actually had the most to gain by getting rid of Yosef. Why? Financially. Reuven is a firstborn, gets a double portion. Double portion, he gets twice as much if Yosef's not there. Right? Think about the will for a second. Think about the estate. The estate will get divided into 12, actually into 13, because Reuven gets twice as much. You get rid of one kid, it gets divided into 12, and Reuven gets twice as much. So therefore, Reuven gains twice as much as all the others do by getting rid of Yosef. So Reuven should have been the one, in pure financial motives, he should have been the one who was most motivated to... You like this, or you don't like this kind of thinking? And I'm sorry for upsetting you. But he should have been the one who was most enthusiastic about getting rid of him. So I want to pause for a second, as far as why he may not have thought that way. Look at source number 9. Source number 9 says, "Vayhi b'shkon Yisrael ba'aretz, ahi, vayelach Reuven vayishkav et Bilha pilegesh aviv vayishma Yisrael, vayhi b'nei Yaakov shneimasar." When they live in this land, Reuven goes, I'm sorry for saying this, because a lot of people who studied in Yeshiva High School, they either skip this or read this differently. What does it actually mean? He he lie with, right? He slept with Bilhah, his father's Pilegesh. So there are echoes of Adoniyahu over here. He's taking his claim to leadership. He's taking over. He's also perhaps claiming, I want to go back to the financial issue. He's also perhaps claiming that there are real sons and there are Pilagshim. The real sons are the sons of Rachel and Leah, and the Pilagshim are a lower status, and maybe when it comes to dividing the estate, maybe the children of Pilagshim have no rights whatsoever. What happens to Avraham's children from the Pilagshim? They were all sent away. And who actually is the one who inherits? It's only the real son is the one who inherits. So Reuven may be making a claim over here, as much as you didn't like the financial side of things, that could very well be the motivation over here. Now Chazal are guilty of a cover-up. What's the cover-up? In the Gemara in source number 10, Amar Shumwa Echanani Amar Rabbi Yonatan, Kola Omer Reuven Chata, Eino Ela To'eh. Whoever says that Reuven sinned is making a mistake. By the way, it never says he doesn't sin, it just says he shouldn't say it. Right? So we won't say it. By the way, incidentally, Yaakov, in the bracha, quote-unquote bracha to Reuven, it's not a bracha, Reuven b'chari ata kochiv rishit ani yeter seid v'yeseroz, pachas kemaim al totar, ki alita al mishkavei avicha. So we have machlokas between Yaakov and the Gemara, so you can decide who you want to pass them like. So, and Yaakov also doesn't seem to know this, that kola omesh Reuven chatein alatoe, because Yaakov says, chata, and therefore you're not going to have the leadership. But they kept all the mitzvahs. Okay. So, Reuven sins. Now, can we be honest for a second? I mentioned Esav before. Esav says, as soon as our father's dead, I'm going to kill him. The brothers did something worse than Esav. Right? Yishmael laughs at Yitzchak's paternity. Reuven does something worse than Yishmael. Yishmael gets kicked out of the family. Esav gets kicked out of the family. What about Reuven? Now, this is the problem. Is Reuven going to stay in the family, or Reuven's going to get kicked out? The Pasuk itself is fascinating, because what did the Pasuk say in Source 9? You have a pay, right? You have a pause. V'yu b'nei Yaakov shnei masar, but there are 12 sons. Which means the Torah seems to be making a statement over here that despite what Reuven did, he's not being kicked out. But who is the one who actually articulates it? Who is the one who says that Reuven is a full-fledged brother and not kicked out? And that's Yosef when he has his dream. Because when Yosef has his dream, look at source number 8, Vechalom Yaakov, Yosef chalom, v'yaged le'echav, v'yosipo otznoto, v'yom aleim shum ha'chalom hazeh asher chalamti, listen to my dream, v'nei anachnu ma'lim ha'limim b'toch ha'sadeh, v'nei kama alumati, v'gam nitzvenei, right, you all bow down, okay? And the brothers say, are you going to be a king over us? Are you going to rule over us? Now the second dream, v'chalom od chalom acher, v'yisaper oto le'echav, v'yom hinei chalamti chalom od, v'nei ha'shemesh reach v'achad asar kochabim mishtachabim le'echav. 11 stars are going to bow down to me. If it's 11 stars, all the other brothers are saying, what, we're going to bow down to you? And one brother is saying, I'm still part of the family. Reuven has appreciation that Yosef's dream, even his dreams, his narcissistic delusions of grandeur, which we realize afterwards are not narcissistic and are not delusions of grandeur, they're really true. But in Yosef's dream, all 11 brothers are part of the story. And I would say that this could be another reason why Yosef includes Reuven, who had, again, the best of all the brothers to kick out would have been Reuven for the outrage that he does. And Yosef still dreams, no, a brother is a brother. He's still part of the family. So when the brothers want to get rid of Yosef, Reuven's the one who comes back and says, no, we don't get rid of brothers. The rest of them don't understand this because the rest of them are not as fragile as Reuven is. Reuven's in the worst position, and therefore he's the one who wants to try to save Yosef. So I'm saying but this is the same theme again. The theme is, do you turn back on a brother or do you keep a brother? And Reuven understands this because he's the only one who will have appreciation of Yosef's dream that 11 stars bow down to me, because 11 stars means that Yosef considers Reuven, even in his dreams, to be part of the family. And therefore, I want to go back now to Yosef's strategy to Yosef's understanding, to Yosef's understanding. And let's go back and take a look from the speech that Yosef gives and see what happens. From the beginning of source number one, Yosef can't control himself anymore. Right? When he confesses, he cries and so on, and Yosef then says, Ani Yosef, ha'od avichai. So we already discussed that. Yosef is my father still alive. And they can't respond to that. V'yom Yosef elachav gishu na'ilai. So now we have, again, a reconciliation. Come close, speak softly. V'yomer, Ani Yosef, achichem, Hashem achartem ati Mitzrayimah. So again, we have the beautiful Sforno saying that he's using this not in order to say, look at the treachery that you did to me, but rather, this is proof that I actually really am Yosef. V'ta'al te'atzvu v'al yichar be'enechem. Don't be upset. Ki machartem oti hena. By the way, also, you know, the famous Rashbam who says that the brothers didn't do it. So Yosef seems to paskin against the Rashbam. He thinks that they did do it. Ki lemichya shlochani elokim lefnechem. Because God sent me in order to keep us all alive, keep you alive. Kizeshna taima ra'av b'kerev aretz. There's only 2 years of the earth, another 5 years coming. But yishlochani elokim lefnechem. And again he uses elokim. So far he used elokim now in Pasuk Hey, he uses elokim in Pasuk Zayin. But yishlochani elokim lefnechem. Lesum lachem she'irit ba'aretz lechiyot lachem pleta gdola. Again, to have life and to survive. Again in Pasachet, Vatem Vatalo Atem Shalachtem Otihena Ki Elokim. V'yismaini la'av l'paro u'ladon l'kol beito u'moshel l'kol eretz Mitzrayim. Now, Yosef over here used Elokim 3 times in that, you know, in those couple of verses. Look what he says in verse 10. Maru v'alu elavi. Oh, you like that? Pasuk Tet. Maru v'alu elavi. You like that he says avi? Because he could have said something else. El avi. V'amartem elav. Ko amar bincha Yosef. Samani Elokim. God made me. La'adon l'kol Mitzrayim. God made me a ruler over Egypt. And when the brothers go back to Yaakov, and then he continues and says, you know, you're going to come here and I'll take care of you. Also notice how he says, I'll take care of you. I'll take care of you, Yaakov. You and your children, right? It doesn't say my brothers. You and your children and their children and so on and so forth. V'kikalti otcha, right? And I will give sustenance to you. Sham ki ot chamesh shanim, Rav Zeresh, ata uvetacha v'kol ha-shalach. You and your family and everything with you, but it's you. So again, I'm going to say that in Yosef's speech over here, something very interesting is happening. Because on the one hand, it's this musar that he gives them, the tochacha he gives them, the rebuke he gives them. On the other hand, come close. But now, something else has happened, and that's the whole mentioning of God, which I want to come back to. And then you come down, you and your family, I'll take care of you and your family. V'nei einechem ra'ot, Pasuk Yud Bet, v'nei achi Binyamin, my brother Binyamin. Okay, now he uses the term of brotherhood again. Ki pi hamidaber aleichem. V'gadetem la'avi et kol kvodi. Tell my father about all of my honor in Mitzrayim. V'kol asheraitim u'mahartim v'radetem et avi heina. Take my father. And you realize all along the way over here, he could have used a different word for father. What word could he have used? Our father. And he does not do that in this whole speech. V'yipol tzavari binyamin achiv. And now he kisses all of his brothers. So now there's the shift. So now, when they go down to their father, what are they supposed to say? Okay, this is a test. What were they supposed to say? What did he instruct them to say? He had a very specific... Yosef, by the way, all along is very specific in what he says, in what he communicates. What exactly did he tell them to say? One second.
Yosef
don't.
He's the ruler.
Your son Yosef sent this message.
No.
Elohim sent me.
Right. In his message, again, Pasuk Ted, Maharu va'alu elavi, go hurry and say to my father, va'amartim love, ko amar bencha Yosef, samani Elohim, God has made me, la'don l'chol Mitzrayim. When the brothers go down and they talk to Yaakov, Pasuk Kaf Hei, Ve'alu Mitzrayim, Ve'yavo Eretz Kanan, El Yaakov Avihem, they go, of course, to Yaakov, their father, Ve'yagidu Lo Leimor, they say, Od Yosef Chai, Yosef is alive. V'chihu Moshel B'kol Eretz Mitzrayim, and he is the ruler of all of Egypt. What did they leave out? Okay, right. So therefore, first of all, what I want to claim is that there's a disconnect between what he says and what they hear. He is actually making a claim over here, and they may not be accepting it. And obviously, therefore, this is the most important part. What is Yosef saying? And he has said it before, they just never caught it along the way. Yosef is saying that this has been God's plan from the beginning, that God has done this, and Yosef is actually saying, these are the dreams. From the time I had those dreams, that was God gave me, I'm going to say the word again, God gave me that prophecy. This has been from God from the very beginning. God put me here. You didn't do it. You're pawns. They're saying to the brothers. He's exonerating them on the one hand, but on the other hand, he's saying, you see, my dreams came true. That's what Yosef is saying every time he mentions God in this. You're exonerated. You have nothing to do with this. This isn't about you. You're not involved in this story. This is manifest destiny. This is God's will. You know, based on last week's lesson, this is part of the Brit Bein Abikarim. We're supposed to come here. This is right, exactly. This is part of the Brit Bein Abikarim. You were supposed to be here, and it was God's plan to put me here. And if you were to actually ask Yosef an honest question, I don't know if you ever thought about this, Yosef, what's the worst thing that ever happened to you? Well, when my brothers saw me in the field and they ripped the clothing off of me and they threw me in the pit and so on. Yosef, what was the best thing that ever happened to you? Well, when my brothers sold me to Egypt, because of that I ended up becoming the ruler of Egypt. Meaning, we can get fooled with Yosef, because Yosef has, and we talked about this as well, he has God on his lips all the time, but we need to be careful how he talks about God. He tells his brothers, you didn't do this. You're not part of this story. This was what God did. So, one second. On the one hand, this is great. They're off the hook. But they can't accept it. One second. They can't accept this. And by the way, they never accept it. They never believe him. And they, even at the end, that's what I'm saying. You get to the very end of Bereshit, Yaakov dies, and they come back and they say, you know, please don't kill us. Please don't kill us and just make us slaves because what we did. And Yosef, no. Yosef, all along, it's not you. This is not you. You were pawns in this, because this was God's hand in this. This is what God wanted, and I was meant to be king, and I was meant to be ruler, and God did this. You didn't do this. And they can't accept it, because maybe they can't accept the dream still. Meaning, do they ever accept the dreams? And by the way, if you want to you want to be like this and say, hold it, the second dream never came true. Yaakov never does bow down. So if the second dream never... Actually, see, the second dream comes true, because if you noticed in the first dream, it says you're going to come and bow down, your sheaves will bow down to my sheaves, you will need to come to me for food. But there's no number given then. Do they come and bow down to him when they need food? Absolutely. So that first dream does come true. The second dream, which has two elements to it, it has the 11 stars, but and the sun and the moon. Whole question what the moon is, because Rachel's not alive, maybe Bilhah, maybe not. I'm saying that's a whole question about it. Chazal even say you can't have a dream without some silliness to it, without something which is irrelevant to it. So that part can come true, but part of the second dream comes true, and that's the number 11. That as we realize today, that number 11 is quite significant, because Reuven hears that very, very loudly. But the other brothers would say, hold it a second, what are you talking about? The dreams never really came true, because Yaakov never bowed down, the dreams are invalid, whatever. Again, you can see somebody coming back and claiming this, when Yosef is staking a claim here. Absolutely, this has been the hand of God all the way through, this is not you, it's God. And what are they saying? No, it's us, and not God. Which means Yosef's reconciliation with them is a wonderful reconciliation. He wants to make up to them and say, you didn't do this. You don't have the guilt in this. God has done this. And they're saying, we don't accept that God did this. And how do I know they're not accepting it? I have two pieces of information that tell me that they don't accept it. One, when they go to Yaakov, they cannot say what Yosef said. They cannot say his words. They cannot say, God has placed me in front of Egypt. No, Yosef has somehow become the ruler of Egypt. And the second point is, at the very end of the story, they come back and say, Yosef, you know, Yosef is going to punish us for what we did. And Yosef all along is saying, no. By the way, there was one point in the middle of the story where Yosef already gave them a hint about this, but they never caught it. It's okay, I caught it, but they didn't catch it. Right. From Yosef's perspective, this is the best thing that ever happened to him. This is the best thing that ever happened to him. And the brothers can't accept that. Because Yosef sees the hand of God in it. They don't see the hand of God in it. Because they don't see the hand of God in it, then again, it's treachery from his side. From his side, it's not. Which means Yosef, his point is, you are my brothers. You are not guilty, as far as I'm concerned. Correct. God may have to suffer. But Yosef has been saying this all the way through. When Yosef first meets up with the brothers, you don't have this in front of you. In Perek Mem Bet, when we go back to the first meeting, Vayomer Lehem Yosef, Hoshea Dibarti Lechem, Lemaraglim Atem, Bizot Tivrechu Chei Paro. By the way, I love the fact that he keeps swearing on Paro's life. Right? Yeah, by the life of my mother-in-law, I'm kidding. But I mean, it's great that whenever he wants to swear, he swears by Paro. He does it a couple times here. You know, this is how you be judged. Hey Paro, Timtzu Mizeh, Kim Bavo Achichem Akaton Heina. Again, afterwards he says in the next pasuk, Shluchu Michem Echad Nikachet Achichem Vatimer. Right. The Imlo Hey Paro Kimur. Right. By the life of Paro, your spies. Okay. Worst comes to worst, Paro takes the big one. Fine. Then pasuk Yud Zayin, Vayasof Otam Ela Mishmar Shloshet Yamim. He locks them up for 3 days. Vayomer Lehem Yosef, Yom Shlishi, Zot Asu V'Yichyu Et Elokim Ani Yarei. I fear God. And by the way, that should throw them for a loop completely. Who is this Egyptian guy who fears God? So he tells them from the very beginning, I am a God fearing person. Later on, and you won't be able to say this now, when the money goes back to their bag, and this is what I'm saying, which is, I caught it, I don't know if they caught it, maybe afterwards they caught it, when the money is back in their bag and they come back, and Yosef has his emissary or his proxy say to them, Vayomer Shalom Lechem, Al Tiru, don't be afraid, Elokeichem, your God, Ve'elokei Avichem, and your father's God, Natan Lechem, he gave this to you. Now, how exactly did he give this to you? What's he really trying to say? Again, it's Yosef screaming. Yosef is a passive aggressive. He screams very quietly. Yosef is screaming at them and saying, I'm Yosef, and the dreams came true, and God may be the ruler over here, and because I'm ruler, what is going to happen? You're my brothers. I take care of my brothers. And therefore, when he says, God has done this, your God has given your money back, of course, you don't charge your, you know, it's family doesn't come for Shabbos, and then, okay, here's the bill. Maybe you should do that. you don't give them the bill afterwards. What Yosef is saying, your God did this. What do they hear? Oh, you're, in a micro way, they understand that, oh, your God put the money back in the bag. And what's Yosef saying to them? Or again, through proxy, what is Yosef saying to them? The whole thing, your God has made me the ruler of Egypt, who therefore has understood this whole economic 14-year plan and has put me here to save your lives. And this is part of a much larger plan. And because of this, again, I'm going back to that same point. We are brothers over here, and God has done all of this. Do they get this? No. Did Yosef say this? 100%. Later on, when the thing is actually found in Binyamin's bag, Vayomim Yosef Mama says Esher Asitem, what is this thing you did? Here Yosef switches, and here's where he confuses them. Because after all of this religious talk coming out, Halo Yadatem, didn't you know? Ki Nachesh Nachesh Ishasher Kamoni? Didn't you know that I'm a man who understands divination, and I'm a man who knows the occult? I'm the man who hold it. What happened to the ethical guy who, you know, I'm not going to play God? What happened? But Yom Yehuda, and that's what gets Yehuda to respond and say, and for the first time, we don't find Yehuda saying this before. He starts saying slichos. Mano mar laduni, manidaber, manitzadak, ha'elokim matzat avon avadecha. He was expecting Yosef to say, you know, again, am I God? Am I the one who judges? Am I the one in charge? No. So over here, he finally gets Yehuda to say this, but I want to come back again. Yosef has been saying this from the very beginning to them, right? I fear God. God has made a plan. This is part of the plan. You, therefore, are not part of this story. You, therefore, are completely exonerated. God has done this. And the brothers, you can decide now whether they hear this or not. I don't think they hear it. I don't think they accept it. They don't say it to Yaakov. And they themselves don't believe it later on. And of course you can say, again, I understand the objections that I heard, but I understand the critique by saying that just because God is the one who's making the larger plan doesn't mean they're not guilty of something. Now, of course, Chazal tell us that this is sinat chinam, and what they did from their perspective was absolutely unaccepted. But it's fascinating that Yosef seems to forgive them. And he's sincere about this. And the reason Yosef is sincere about this is because he has a lot riding on this. Yosef is staking a claim that my dreams have been true, my dreams are prophecy, my dreams are word of God, and there's been a plan of God from the very beginning, and my being a ruler is part of the plan of God, and therefore, along the way, going all the way back to this anonymous man he met on the road, right? Yosef is sent to Shechem, which is a bad place, and what do we hear instead? That they actually end up in Dotan. Dotan is Jenin, which is a worse place. And if he wouldn't have bumped into this guy, but what does Yosef say when he bumps into this guy along the way? I'm looking for my brothers. That's Yosef. It's his brothers. And it remains his brothers. And that's why this Chazal is so beautiful. Chazal is the brothers make a cherem, and then you find all these were shown in the Balei Tosfot. Oh, Yosef, if the brothers are in on it, and they make a pact they're not going to reveal, Yosef's whole point is that I'm one of your brothers, and he refuses to reveal it as well. Again, it's fascinating, but that's the way the Balei Tosfot read this Midrash about the cherem. The Midrash says God accepted it, and Yosef says, okay, brothers are brothers. We have a deal, and we have a deal, and therefore I can't reveal this either. So as I said, fascinating point. Yosef, and that's what I suggested earlier, Yosef therefore may have been the one to say brothers are brothers, and even if Reuven messed up, and if even Reuven did something wrong, and again, this may be the actual backdrop of the entire thing. Reuven is trying to show that the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah are not legitimate children, and what does the Chumash say? Yosef narat b'nei Bilhah b'nei Zilpah. Yosef, for his part, he reaches out to them. He's the one who accepts them as brothers. Yosef treats them as brothers. Which, of course, by the way, would infuriate the sons of Leah, because they stand the most to lose. Because, again, Yosef has favorite son status. Children of Leah would be the second tier, and then these children of Leah should be the third tier. What does Yosef say? No, there's no tiers over here, which is easy for him to say, being the favorite son. All of us are equal. But Yosef really believes that. It's 11 stars. Reuben can mess up. No, you're still my brother. And that's part of the anger that Yosef has. Again, if I'm going to call it anger. And that's really going on the whole time. You know, just think about this one scene. They all sit down together, and he places them in order. By the way, when he puts them in order, where does he put himself? Does he put himself between Binyamin and between the next one? Again, I'm just asking. He puts them all in order, and they all are shocked. All 12 brothers are sitting together for the first time, and then 11 of them walk away, and they think, wow, we succeeded. We got Shimon back. We got Binyamin back. Our family is whole again. We can go back. And as they're walking out the door, Yosef is looking at them. You know, guys, did you forget something? There's somebody you forgot. You just all turned your back on your brother, and they can't even know it's him. And that's, again, that Midrash. Yosef's in the room. Where? What are you talking about? Yosef's alive. What are you talking about? Which means Yosef's, again, part of his anger is, you don't turn around on a brother. But if you made a pact, I'll be part of the pact, because I'm still your brother. And if you sold me, I forgive you for it, because I'm your brother. And if you need food, I'm giving you your money back. Why? Because this is part of God's plan. I'm your brother. And no matter what happens over here, even at the end of the story, when they say, please don't, you know, kill us, just make us slaves, Yosef, what are you talking about? You're my brothers. Which means Yosef all along over here, there's two points. How did he do this to your father? And that's when he breaks down. You're accusing me of doing this to our father? You're accusing me of torturing the father? Guys, look in the mirror. You're the ones who did this. But you're the ones who also turned around and walked away from your brother, and that you never do, because we're brothers and you made a cherem, I'll be part of the cherem. But I will take care of you. I will take care of you. And that never changes. So what we have over here in this conversation, I think, is one of, like maybe this happens to all of us, total miscommunication. One person speaking and the other person not hearing. One person speaking about God and the other side not hearing it at all. And they go back to the father and say, oh, guess what? Yosef became king, and that's not what Yosef said. This was God's plan. God made me king. And they just don't seem to accept it. So what we have over here is, you know, getting all the way towards the end of Bereishit, we have our wonderful, dysfunctional family, right, going back generations, and they can't communicate, but Yosef knows. And Yosef is right. This was God's plan. God did put him there. God's hand in is in this, and therefore he, maybe God won't forgive them, but Yosef is going to completely forgive his brothers.